Good morning and welcome to Occupy the Airwaves. Okay, I've planned to read a long post by a guy named Simplicissus on Substack, but it was from May 1st and already we have other updates in the upcoming escalation in the war in Ukraine. And one of them, of course, is the assassination attempt on Putin. We were told that Ukraine tried to assassinate Putin by putting a little drone on top of the Kremlin and blowing it up. Okay, I'm sorry, but that is not a credible assassination attempt. The time that somebody blew up his car when he actually wasn't in it, but killed his favorite driver, now that was an assassination attempt. What the Yukis did to Darina Dugin, blowing up her car, that was an assassination attempt. What they did to the blogger in St. Petersburg, blowing him up and killing not just him, but a bunch of people in a restaurant, injuring many, many more, that's a serious assassination attempt. Flying a little drone on top of a big old building and saying, yeah, we're trying to kill one guy in that building, that's not. So what is the point? What was the point of that attack? Well, I'm going to get into it in this article, but I would just like to point out that that seemed like a provocation designed to provide propaganda material for a retaliation by the Kremlin, according to the mighty Wurlitzer of propaganda, and that then could be used to get the U.S. and NATO directly into the war in Ukraine. And the U.S. has been moving thousands and thousands of troops to Ramstein Base, Air Force Base in Germany, and their new forward operating base in Poland, as well as Romania. And they're moving troops there, too. There's got to be a reason. You don't move, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands, you know, tens of thousands of troops and all kinds of heavy equipment, tanks and all that sort of thing. You don't move it to the border of Ukraine. Well, in case of Germany, not the border, but you know what I'm saying. Unless you're going to use it. What is that old thing? If there's a gun in the first act of a play, it will go off by the time the play is over. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They've got all these people staged and ready to go. They just need an excuse for the United States to openly intervene in Ukraine. So they need Russia to do something wild and crazy, but Russia is refusing to do that. They refuse to assassinate Zelensky or any of the top people. They don't really bomb Kiev, the city, that much. They've taken out the electricity a couple times, but they don't really bomb the city. The times the United States says, the mighty Wurlitzer says, that Kiev has been bombed, it's usually been air defense missiles that went wrong. You know, they shoot off their S-200 and they accidentally hit an apartment building is usually what happened. And then the United States, of course, just blames it on Russia, but it's not true. Anyhow, it could be that this so-called assassination attempt on Putin is actually an excuse for the United States to do a big old provocation and blame it on Russia and then get directly involved in the war. That is my speculation. That's what I think. But anyhow, we'll go back to the thing I was going to read, but I thought I'd read from May 2nd, a moonofalabama.org thing, and it was quoting the Times of London, in which the Times of London points out very clearly that Ukraine doesn't really want to go to war, but the United States is pushing them to go to war, just like Ukraine sued for peace 3 times at the beginning of this thing. And each time the United States said, nope, you have to keep fighting to the last Ukrainian. Because the plan, of course, is to empty Ukraine of Ukrainians so that the United States, Cargo, Monsanto, BlackRock can move in and take over the best farmland in Europe. So they don't want any of those pesky Ukrainians around to argue with them. So they're going to fight to the last Ukrainian. They say it very clearly. If they say it, you probably should believe them. But anyhow, this is from the London Times. Ukraine isn't ready for its big offensive, but it has no choice. And then the article goes, Kiev is locked into a spring or summer push, despite burning through ammo so fast that the West can't keep up. Luckily, Russia is out of ideas, too. While the Ukrainians are moving quickly to assimilate their 230 new and reconditioned Western tanks and 1,550 armored vehicles, they still lack proper air defenses for any big offensive operation. That puts them at risk from Russian air power. Western defense sources are also uncertain whether senior commanders can adapt to the new systems as well as their soldiers on the ground. So you see what they're setting that up. This is London Times. They are definitely part of the problem. They're part of the West pushing for more war. But what they're doing here is they're setting up so the United States Air Force can intervene with fighter planes, because that's what they're trying to say here. All right, back to London Times. Yet Kiev has little real choice but to launch a major spring or summer offensive. Its leaders are increasingly boxed in. As an American defense official put it, quote, "The Ukrainians have surprised us as well as Putin in the past, but have much less room for maneuver now, and the Russians know it," unquote. President Zelensky has managed the West with great skill, but to maintain its support, he has to show what Western insiders rather tastelessly call a return on investment. So they're quoting people in Washington and going, "Oh, those Yanks are so tasteless. They're so crude. They can invest in Ukraine, give them $150 billion, and then say, oh, in return for this $150 billion, we need you to all die, so that we can move into your country." Oh, that's so tasteless. My goodness. So anyhow, the last paragraph is, "He must also balance domestic politics. Hawks such as Kyrola Budanov, Ukraine's military intelligence chief, prevent any meaningful talk about negotiations, even though some in the government think now is the time to put out feelers. One Western diplomat in Kiev described a surreal parallel experience as his interlocutors discussed potential formats for negotiations one evening and then shout, 'There can be no talks with Russia,' in public the next day." So he's blaming it on some dude, some head of military intelligence chief, right after he's pointed out that he has to start this offensive, even though they're not ready and they're going to lose, to maintain the support of the U.S., because the Washington insiders rather tastelessly call it a turn on investment. In other words, the Washington says, "We paid for you to fight to the last Ukrainian, and you're damn well going to fight to the last Ukrainian, no matter if you know, want to or not." And that is what's going on here. Let me get to this Simplicius the Thinker, and it's simplicius76.substack.com, and this is from May 1st. Even though it's, you know, now 4 days ago, I think it's still relevant. Okay, firstly, let's cover the most pressing news. The anxiety surrounding the upcoming Ukrainian offensive is reaching a peak. Many predictions stated it would come early to mid-May. Perzhokin himself just stated that May 2nd is when the rains will stop and the ground will begin fully drying up, which will take a couple weeks at most. Recall that Vladkin's old prophecy was between Easter and May 15th at the latest. The best scenario for the armed forces of Ukraine would be an offensive in June. In May, they would have time to prepare the 61st, 44th, 115th, and 5th brigades. The enemy wants to gather more troops that can deliver massive strikes in all directions. However, the Western hosts require an offensive on the eve of May 9th. Okay, so our overlords, he calls them hosts. They're not hosts. They're the bosses of Zelensky in Ukraine. And they want to have an offensive on the eve of May 9th because May 9th is a big deal to Russia. The last time they beat the Nazis, the last time they fought the Nazis and beat them at a cost of 27 million Russian lives, the Nazis, the Germans, surrendered on May 9th. And now they're fighting the descendants of those Nazis, both from the Ratline people that went to United States and Canada and the Banderas that stayed in Ukraine and waged a terror campaign for 10 years after World War II. Even after the German Nazis surrendered, the Ukrainian Nazis kept up their terror attacks for another 10 years. But in any case, May 9th is a big deal. That's the day the Germans surrendered and the Russians celebrate it every year. They remember their dead and they celebrate the triumph over Nazism. And they swear that never again will they be conquered by Nazism. And now, danged if they aren't staring it in the face again, right there on their border. So that is why the Nazis in the United States, I mean, come on now, they're sympathizers. You know, George H.W. Bush, his father, Prescott Bush, was trading with the Nazi Germans. And so was his other grandfather, the Herbert Walker guy. Yeah, no, these people, Franklin Delano Roosevelt and many other people in the United States government in the 30s and 40s were anti-Nazi. But there was a whole bunch of people that were pro-Nancy. And after Franklin Delano Roosevelt died and Alan Dulles moved in and his brother John Foster Dulles, who were two of the biggest Nazi sympathizers around, Alan Dulles was the ambassador to Switzerland during World War II, and he was meeting with the Nazis in Switzerland during the war to make deals with them. And after the war, he and the Vatican set up the Vatican Rat Line to get top Nazis out of the country, even though there was a whole bunch of Americans, soldiers and lawyers and diplomats, who wanted to prosecute those Nazis. All it takes is a few Nazi rats at the very top, like Alan Dulles was, and they saved a whole bunch of Nazi lives, and now it's back up. It's back up again. And this is why the May 9th date is so important to the United States. They want, and the Western hosts, he calls them, the Westerners. Yeah, they want to say, yeah, you thought May 9th, you're celebrating the end of Nazism? Guess what? We're back. So it's a big deal to them. So Ukraine is not ready to fight, but they have to fight because their Western owners tell them to fight. Okay, so back to Plisissa. Now Ukraine is increasing shellings on various fronts, probing attacks, drone strikes, all potential precursors. There's also activity on the Dnieper. One thing to mention is that for the past few months, Ukraine was said to be damming a lot of water upriver on the Dnieper. The water levels were said to have dropped to historic lows. The reason is presumed to be that they intend to launch a cross-Dnieper assault by drying up the river. Around Kherson, particularly, and possible other regions, there are many areas where the rivers split into a lot of small, marshy tributaries and islets, which are not very deep. If you really drain the river by damming it upstream, it could create crossable conditions. Prozhoshkin has stated that he believes the Ukrainian offensive will come as soon as Bakhmut falls. And Bakhmut is finally on its last legs. It feels like we've been saying that forever, but the gradual progress, slow or not, is undeniable. And judging by the new maps, is doubly undeniable how little of it is left. So, yes, Bakhmut is almost liberated completely. It's literally down to a few city blocks. And the reports from the AFU, Ukraine, are not getting any better, including on other front lines. Here's a text posted on a Ukrainian channel from an AFU soldier named Berlin. Oh, Berlin. I wonder why a Ukrainian soldier would call himself Berlin. He's in Zaporizhzhia, which is where the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant is that Ukraine keeps bombing, and that is very dangerous. It's very dangerous to bomb a nuclear power plant, but they do it anyhow. Anyhow, he said that they tried to attack and the Russians beat them back. Anyone with any sense would think that is a good thing, because why would you want a nuclear power plant to be exploded? I'm just saying. Okay, then he goes into this Prigozhin. He is the head of the Wagner group, who is doing most of the fighting at Bakhmut. So even though he's not a military man, he has a lot to say about this. And he attacked the Russian military command, saying that they aren't doing enough, they aren't providing enough ammunition, they're just incompetent, they're corrupt. I actually might believe that there's corruption involved, because there's corruption involved in Ukraine, and the United States was in Russia for 10 years after they destroyed the Soviet Union in 1991, and they put in a whole lot of fifth columnists and infiltrated a lot of the military and a lot of the security, so I wouldn't be surprised if there's some corruption going on. They need to fire all corrupt generals the way Stalin did back in the late 30s. Now, of course, Nazis don't like that Stalin fired the corrupt generals. They're still screaming about that all these years later. But, oh, look, Russia won. Who was right and who was wrong? The Nazis that got mad that he fired the corrupt generals? Or the Russians who said, you know what, we want to be with people who are patriotic instead. Thank you very much. Bye-bye. So anyhow, Prigozhin is attacking everyone, and then this Simplicica says, despite Prigozhin's seeming doomer outlook, even if it's genuine, I believe that Prigozhin knows hardly any better than we do about the state of the Russian front lines, not counting his own Bakhmut front, of course. As I said before, he's not actually high up in the food chain, has no real military experience, and knows nothing of the Russian army's condition on other fronts apart from his own, nor of why the Ministry of Defense may or may not be conserving munitions. Personally, I'm still inclined to agree with this writer's viewpoint on the coming offensive. And then I cannot read this because the name of the person, because it's in Russian, but the title is Of Ukraine's Glorious Counteroffensive. Zelensky, who is the commander-in-chief of the Ukrainian Armed Forces, now insists on postponing the long-awaited Ukrainian counteroffensive to the end of June because he thinks better weather, warmer Dnieper River, and dry soil will help Ukraine and be, quote, more comfortable for its soldiers, unquote. To me, this translates to, I don't want to deal with this. Please appoint someone else to orchestrate this debacle. And again, this is the commander-in-chief of the Ukrainian military, and he has no say about it because the Nazis in the West, the Western host, want to do it on the victory day, May 9th, the last time that the Russians beat down the Nazis. They want, like I said, they want to say, we're back. It is clear now that Russia is no longer fighting the same Ukrainian army that it did a year and some ago. That's the one that they built up, the U.S. and NATO built up for 8 years. They had them armed, they had them trained, they had all kinds of weapons and stuff. There was something like supposedly 600,000 of them. Okay. Anyhow, that army has been annihilated, and so is the second one during another glorious counteroffensive, namely that around Kharkov. Now, with the third Ukrainian army full of untrained men who don't want to be there, Ukraine is pressed to venture on another great adventure. We've seen many videos of people being caught on various streets of what is still Ukraine, although it is getting increasingly silly to call it a country, even objectively, and many of them show less than enthusiasm. We've seen a guy fainting, a fellow fighting the police, not just one, by the way, and these people will now be sent against the 6 layers deep Russian defenses protected by the actual Russian army. There was some talk that Ukrainians are hoping to rout the Russian army and throw it into panic. I'm assuming upon seeing their grand armada carrying the banners of Odin or whatever, which I hope for their sake isn't true. Actually, that is the U.S. plan, is to launch a shock and awe campaign, you know, like the United States does, like say in Iraq, right? You just attack everybody. You attack civilians, you attack the military, you bomb, you raid, you blow up everything. You shock them so much, they can't believe it that this could happen in this day and age. How could anyone be that uncivilized? We can. Oh, yeah. And then they get full of awe because they're like, no normal person could fight off these crazy nuts. And then they surrender. And that is their plan. They want to do what they did in Iraq. And they think the Russian army will go, oh, my God, I'm scared. And they'll all run back, throw down their weapons and run back to Russia. And that is their plan stated anyhow. Like I said, I think they're putting up a provocation to get the United States involved. But even if the United States is involved, then it would have to be to do shock and awe. Because how are these poor conscripts who have been kidnapped off the streets of Ukraine? And like he said, they don't want to be there. They don't want to go. They want nothing to do with this. But they're thrown in there, handed a rifle, and go, you are now cannon fodder. Our Western hosts have decreed that there should be no more Ukrainians. And you're still a Ukrainian. So we got to get rid of you, down to the last Ukrainian. So anyhow, but they think that those people are going to scare the Russian army and make them throw down their weapons and run to Russia? I don't think so. I think the plan is definitely for the U.S. to get involved. But again, will that work either? I'm thinking not. You remember that the U.S., when it attacked Iraq in 2003 with shock and awe, had already had sanctions on Iraq for 12 years. They'd already starved them. Remember Madeleine Albright? Yeah, we know we killed 500,000 little Iraqi children. Man, it's difficult, but we think it's worth it. Iraq had already been starved and sanctioned, had already been demilitarized. They were practically defenseless. So yeah, shock and awe might have worked on Iraq, but do they really think it's going to work on Russia? Yes, they do, because they're crazy. That's what I'm saying. All right, back to this letter from this Russian whose name I have no idea what it is. This insane mechanic's dream that is Ukrainian heavy equipment garage is about as wonky as their personnel, too. The many nations of the global West chipped in for this fight for the American dollar, and so Ukrainians now have a bit of everything. As pretty as all this equipment looks with a swastika painted on it, it can't do much without ammunition, which Ukraine has very little of now as well. Another thing to point out now is the shortage of air defense ammunition, which allows the Russian Air Force to pummel the Aryans to Valhalla daily. In summary, the 3rd Ukrainian Army is a Frankenstein's monster of equipment that has only been raised a bit. The monster knows it's there, but can't do much in reality. All of the things I mentioned aren't getting any better. It's all getting worse and worse daily and only accelerating. If this is clear to someone like me, whose only military strategy experience comes from video games, I'm pretty sure it is clear to Zaluzhny. I don't like making predictions, but please allow me to make one. The Ukrainian counteroffensive won't happen, at least not the way we imagine it. I know some highly knowledgeable people would disagree with me, but what the heck? The Western pressure on Ukraine will force them to do something, and that something will be presented as a great counteroffensive, but it won't be that at all. Instead, it'll be a desperate attempt at making it look like a counteroffensive. We'll throw in the too young and the too old with no experience or training against Russian artillery to please the Western masters. That's right. If they were actually going to go to this great counteroffensive with only these conscripts, these people that have been kidnapped off the streets, and yeah, they've got them as young as 16 and as old as 60 out there. If it was only them, they would have no chance. But I think the evil people in NATO have thought of another way they're going to try and do it. And I think it involves a bigger war. So just be prepared for that possibility. I may be wrong, but yeah. They can't just throw those conscripts against Russia and just cross your fingers and hope the Russians get scared and run. I mean, that's a battle plan? Seriously? Come on now. I mean, as evil as they are, they're not that stupid. That's what they're telling us because they think we're stupid. But do they really think that? I have reason to doubt that. All right, so back to Simplicicus. Also, I'd like to share this post as well, which confirms some of the numbers of the potential offensive which we bandied about here. Particularly the statement in the second paragraph, which was roughly concurrent with my own calculations. I continue to maintain there has to be at least 150,000 to 250,000 Russian troops not yet committed to conflict, which are sitting and waiting and mostly being utilized for rotational purposes to keep troops fresh and inure them to combat conditions slowly and gradually. Okay, so this is what they say about the troops in Ukraine. As for the possible offensive of the armed forces of Ukraine, many large figures will be thrown in, but size ranges can be compiled based on various data sources. The Ukrainian garrison in Zaporizhia has more than 50,000 troops, including fighters trained in the West, and new equipment, including tanks. These are the people that are bombing the nuclear power plant. In the Dnipropetrovsk region, okay, obviously I cannot pronounce these names, but you know. There are also large reserves of the armed forces of Ukraine, at least 100 to 150,000 people. Draws attention to the fact they are kept away from the front and will be allowed to fight on the move. It is reported that in the area of Bakhmut, AFU troops numbering from 50,000 to 80,000 people are waiting for the offensive. However, from these troops, the Ukrainian armed forces send new reinforcements daily to the Bakhmut meat grinder where losses are high, which worsens and weakens further conditions for the spring offensive. Meanwhile, things are looking no better on the West and Ukrainian side. A slew of headlines and MSN articles continue either downplay, downgrade, or check expectations for the coming Ukrainian offensive. And then Newsweek has a thing. So Newsweek magazine says, Ukraine, on the other hand, concentrated many of its best equipped and best trained troops in Bakhmut, where they were pounded for months by Russian artillery, missiles, and drones. In the battle for Bakhmut, Ukraine lost thousands of experienced troops who cannot be replaced by conscripts with a few weeks of accelerated training. Ultimately, we are not generals, but we do understand economics. It has always seemed extremely unlikely to us that a nation with a 2021 GDP of 200 billion and a population of 44 million could defeat a nation with a GDP of 1.8 trillion and a population of 145 million. This would seem particularly true if only the larger nation, that is Russia, possessed a sizable air force, significant defense industries, and nuclear weapons. It ends with this flat assessment. The classic requirements for a just war include a reasonable possibility of victory. While a generation of Ukrainian men are dying, the sad reality is that Ukraine has about as much chance of winning a war against Russia as Mexico would of winning a war with the United States. Okay, so these people clearly are not in on any plan for NATO to intervene. They're trying to get Americans who are bloodthirsty to get used to the idea that no, you know, the Russians are not going to drop their weapons and run. So I think there's another plan. Okay, so Politico says, Biden's team fears the aftermath of a failed Ukrainian counteroffensive. He's talking now about this Ukrainian offensive. The amount of munitions they've stockpiled is likely only enough for one big impressive and flashy push, i.e. shock and awe. It is critical that this push results in some type of very tangible result that can be used as a monumental psychological victory to rally flagging European support. The problem is, if they waste the stockpile in some entrenched theater, they will only bog themselves down and end up in a situation weeks down the line where they have no more munitions and have achieved only pushing into the heart of, let's say, Donetsk region without achieving the sort of flashy rallying victory necessary. By the way, they're still bombing civilians in Donetsk City. They killed a little girl on a bus and her grandmother, along with a bunch of other people on the bus. They're even going into original Russia and killing people there, because that's the kind of terrorists they are. They also attacked a Russian oil tanker way over in Asia. But we're supposed to think Ukraine did that? Uh-huh, sure. With what Navy or Air Force or whatever it was? Yeah, sure. Clearly, the United States and NATO are getting involved more and more and more. I believe the only objective that could generate such a victory is giving Russia a major scare vis-a-vis Crimea, not least of which reason being that striking against directions populated by LDPR or Wagner would not really be an optics victory against Russia itself. Only the optics of a major victory against true Russian forces would give the sort of rallying cry intended. And no direction is associated with the true heart of Russia more than the Crimean one. That is why I simply can't see any way out for them other than going for Crimea, or in its general direction, Melitopol, Brunsk, or Mariupol. Okay, I don't think he realizes, that maybe this guy's not American, but I don't think he realizes that the propaganda in America is that Crimea isn't really Russia either. Even though it's been Russia since before the United States was a country. But that doesn't matter. All that matters is the propaganda. In any case, the Donbass, the LDPR, and the DNPR are both part of Russia now. They already voted for that. And Crimea voted for it a long time ago. They voted for it in 1991 and in 2014. On the topic of Ukraine's preparation, recently there have been more and more videos of Leopards and Bradleys in Ukraine. One of the videos showed the Bradleys, as well as a T-55M, sporting new tactical symbols, which is typically a sign they'll be used in combat soon. Oh, look at what they've painted on it. As can be seen, the symbol has been identified as closely resembling the Wehrmacht 22nd Panzer Division. So they, see, this is what they always do. They openly wear swastikas and Panzer, you know, and German Nazi insignia. And then the mighty Willitzer tells Americans, no, they're not, there's no Nazis in Ukraine. Why, their president is Jewish. Yeah, the president that has a gun to his head by the right sector people, that president? Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, there's Nazis in Ukraine. Rybar has compiled the following map and information as to the offensive preparations, showing Ukrainian units moving up to the front line, entering special training, etc. And then there's a map that you can see. One thing to keep an eye on as we get closer to go time is the following report, which claims that the United States has recently outfitted Ukraine with radiation sensors to detect nuclear blasts. This is worrying only from the standpoint of my long-held theory that once Russia truly crushes the Ukrainian army once and for all, one of the only remaining ways out to save Ukraine will be a nuclear false flag, i.e. blaming some nuclear attack on Russia, similar to the infamous gas attacks blamed on Assad. Okay, listen to this from the New York Times. The United States is wiring Ukraine with sensors that can detect bursts of radiation from a nuclear weapon or a dirty bomb and can confirm the identity of the attacker, the Times report says. The goal, according to the report, is for U.S. officials to be made immediately aware if a radioactive weapon detonates inside Ukraine and to be able to identify Russian forces as the culprit. Are you kidding me? They're putting sensors into Ukraine in order to finger Russia for a nuclear bomb blast. That sounds like a setup to me. Like a preparation for a false flag, for sure. That's what it sounds like. And now we have this assassination attempt on Putin to be followed by what? maybe a nuclear bomb in Kiev, which their new spiffy handy-dandy sensors that are fixed to be able to identify Russian forces as the culprit will identify Russian forces as the culprit. And then the United States and NATO, we got less than a week to May 9th. They have to be involved by May 9th in order to have their shock and awe campaign to ruin Russia's victory day. They need to show Russia that this time they're not going to beat the Nazis. This time the Nazis are going to beat them. Seriously, the goal, according to the report, is for U.S. officials to be immediately aware if a radioactive weapon detonates inside Ukraine and to be able to identify Russian forces as the culprit? Come on now. Obviously, this is a setup, and this isn't going to go well. I'm sorry, but if Americans continue to fall for this obvious nonsense, well, then we're just going to goose-step right into war along with our owners, who are definitely goose-stepping and hail-hailing. I'm just saying, it's not going to go well for us unless we wake up and quit going along with this stuff. All right, that's the end of Occupy the Airwaves. See you next week.